You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A union election is set for February 25th at a Walmart tire and auto service store in Loveland, Colorado. The workers there would be the first Walmart workers in the U.S. to unionize if the United Food and Commercial Workers are successful. Norberto Ricardo is the UFCW organizer in Loveland. He believes the workers will win, but he says Walmart is trying to intimidate its workers into not joining unions. Ricardo says it's important to organize Walmart because it pays very low wages, doesn't provide adequate benefits, and drags down wages of other companies. He would like to see workers exercise their rights to organize without fear.
I would like for all these employees from Walmart to reunite together and not to be afraid and leave the fear somewhere else and go forward with the process to organize and become one union.
Federal employees from the Department of Defense marched on Capitol Hill yesterday in protest of a proposed personnel regulation overhaul. American Federation of Government Employees President John Sweeney told the hundreds of rallying employees that the National Security Personnel System will jeopardize public safety and national security by taking away employee protections that allow workers to speak freely when they see wrongdoing or mismanagement. The AFGE and other unions representing government employees are planning to file a lawsuit. The decision to implement similar changes at the Department of Homeland Security has already led to one lawsuit, saying that the changes undermine the constitutional right of due process. AFGE General Counsel Mark Roth said of the DHS changes in a press release that managers will have free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions.
New York City's Hudson Yards development has the potential to create thousands of jobs, many of them union jobs, so a coalition of labor and business groups is supporting it. There's opposition, though, from city community groups. Jim Whalen is head of the Hudson Yards Coalition, a labor-led group supporting the development.
What the Hudson Yards plan really represents is a long-term plan that is going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs for New Yorkers on all income levels.
Critics of the development and the sports stadium for the Jets that comes with it say the development is too dense and will cost the city more than $3 billion with an adverse impact on the West Side. Whalen, though, says the stadium and the union jobs it creates is good for New York.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Union membership dropped slightly in 2004. New numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics say that union membership dropped to 12.5% of all workers nationwide. The biggest drops were in Alaska, Illinois, and Missouri, with the major gains being in New York and Minnesota. Almost half of all union membership is concentrated in six states: California, New York, Michigan, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Even from the convoluted depths of Lewis Carroll's fertile imagination, where down is up and wrong is right, the Alice in Wonderland author could not have conjured up a scene as bizarre as George W.'s $40 million inaugural extravaganza. Lavish balls, sumptuous gourmet meals, copious champagne brunches, indulgent corporate-sponsored receptions in posh private clubs, a cornucopia of excess for the privileged and connected, dancing in a swirl of political self-congratulation, and in anticipation of political rewards to come for those elites who picked up the $40 million tab. All this unseemly splurging while the loved ones of Americans who are neither privileged nor connected are mired in the deadly mayhem of George W.'s disastrous war in Iraq. One visual summed up the moral divide between those few so gaily dancing the war away in Washington and those many trapped so miserably in the brutal reality of Iraq. It was the recurring scene of stretch Hummer limousines ferrying the resplendent Gucci crowd from one gaudy gathering to the next, while soldiers driving real Humvees had been denied the protective armor that could save their lives. Indeed, $40 million could buy quite a bit of armor. In 1945, when our troops were in another raging war, Franklin Roosevelt rightly insisted on modesty and austerity for his inaugural, even noting in his formal address that it was appropriate, quote, that the form of this inauguration be simple and its words brief. But in the wonderland of Bush World, modesty is no virtue and hubris is to be celebrated. So party down, y'all. This is Jim Hightower saying, there were even special inaugural blowouts for the 20-somethings, including George's own war-age daughters who loudly proclaimed their support for Daddy's war, but not so much that they would join it. In Bush's world, the elites declare war. Other people do the fighting and dying.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Karl Rove in charge. Have you seen this? Do you believe this? Karl Rove in charge of policy? Karl Rove is now operating out of Hillary Clinton's old office. That should be enough to give the conservatives shivers. He now has oversight over four presidential councils, including the National Security Council and the National Economic Council. Pretty scary stuff here, I would say, broadly speaking. Let's take a look at this guy here, Carl Bush's brain. Terry McAuliffe. Says this appointment, by the way, welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. And today, a beautiful snowy day here in the People's Republic of Vermont, about 4 inches of snow. And I went out this morning. They say we're going to get 16. Should be an entertaining afternoon. Hopefully the lines will stay up and we won't have to go outside and fire up the generator. Yes, here in this part of the country, we actually have a generator. Or if the studio goes down, we can bring it back up. You may have 5 minutes of having to go to say, but I don't think it's going to happen today. Everything's going to be fine. Anyhow, back to Karl Rove. This appointment was very revealing, says Terry McAuliffe, the outgoing but still current head of the Democratic National Committee. Empowering Rove, McAuliffe says, in this way, shows that Bush cares more about political positioning than honest policy discussions. Now, why would he say such a thing as that? Isn't it, Terry, this is over the pale. How can you say such a thing? Terry says, Bush knows that Rove is neither an economic nor a national security expert. He is simply an ideological strategist who has a history of bending the truth and using dirty tricks to get his way. Bending the truth? Dirty tricks? Karl Rove? I thought he was a great American patriot. Well, turns out, as the Democratic National Committee points out, by the way, I just truth in advertising or reporting or whatever, This quote is from the DNC. I guess that would make sense since I just read to you something from Terry McAuliffe. Karl Rove is old friends with top donor for Swift Boat veterans Bob J. Perry, one of the two financiers who made that whole thing happen. Back in 1986, 20 years ago, 19 years ago, Bob Perry, the funder of the Swift Boat Veterans for lies, slander, and, well, in any case, Bob Perry and Karl Rove worked together on the campaign of Bill Clemens as governor of Texas. By the way, speaking of the Swift Boat Veterans, one of the questions that I just never hear asked, you just don't see it on TV, I haven't seen it in print. I keep meaning to get around to writing an op-ed piece about it. In fact, I just submitted a piece to Common Dreams today, and I should have included this in it, is the question, why is it? Well, actually, let me preface this question. Let me give you a little background that'll make this question more relevant. Back in, as I recall, 1972, Richard Nixon was doing polling on the Democrats who were running against him. And he discovered that Ed Muskie would just beat his trousers off. He would just trounce him. That if a Nixon-Muskie presidential ticket, whatever, if that was it, if Richard Nixon had to run against Ed Muskie, the senator from Maine, Muskie would have beat Nixon handily. And so he sent a couple of political operatives up to the Northeast. Bill Loeb, who was then still alive and the publisher of the Manchester Union Leader, published a phony letter. Chuck Colson was involved in this whole thing, talks about it briefly in his autobiography. They stole some letterhead from the Democrats, wrote a phony letter in which they referred to people of French ancestry as Canucks, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And of course, there's a lot of French ancestry folks in New Hampshire and Maine. And, you know, just a derisive, phony letter, supposedly by Ed Muskie. And they attacked his wife. Bill Loeb published these charges against his wife, or if not Bill Loeb, somebody in the local press. And word has it, and this is fairly well accepted. Nobody has come forward and said, I'm the guy, to the best of my knowledge, but it's fairly well known. Somebody slipped something into Ed Muskie's coffee. The word, I remember back when it happened, the word was that it was LSD. And so Ed Muskie gets up on the back of this flatbed truck. He's been trashed with phony letters over, you know, stolen letterhead, these scurrilous articles in the newspaper. It's the New Hampshire primary. He's running against other Democrats. He's not running against Nixon. He's running against George McGovern. And see, Nixon knew that if McGovern ran, he could beat him. But he couldn't beat Ed Muskie. Ed Muskie gets up on the back of this flatbed truck and just starts this rambling, drug-fogged rant. Starts talking about his wife, breaks down in tears about how she's being picked up. It was the end of his career, his political career. Never recovered. Headline, Muskie cries. Who wants to have a president who cries? They didn't put the footnote. By the way, he was stoned out of his mind. Thanks to Nixon's dirty tricks operatives. Well, okay, so that's, and therefore, Nixon got to run against George McGovern, and he beat him. So the first imperative for the Republicans for a long time is figure out who's the strongest Democratic candidate and take him down so that you run against a weak Democratic candidate. So here we have Karl Rove, best friends, former associate, worked together on the 1986 campaign Bill Clemens for governor of Texas. This was before Rove became a Bush groupie. And there's some interesting things about that story. The lies that Rove told about, you know, the bug that he found in his office that he said was planted by Ann Richards, and it turns out he planted it himself, but it got good publicity and blah-de-blah. So anyhow, here. Now, why was it that during the Iowa primary, the one that would pretty much decide who was going to be the Democratic candidate, a Republican-affiliated group, Steve Moore's Club for Growth, brought $1 million into a small state. I'm telling you, you can roll out a product for $1 million. You can roll out a product nationwide for $1 million if you do it right. $1 million in a little state like Iowa. I mean, it's physically large, but it's in terms of the population, it's very small. They brought $1 million into this state to buy advertising on television. And what did that ad say?
That Howard Dean, he's a latte drinking, Volvo driving, you know, bloody, gay-loving, send him back to Vermont.
Why was it that the only candidate that the Republicans deigned to spend $1 million to defeat in the primaries so that they would not have to face him in the general election was Howard Dean? I'll tell you why, because he would have beat George W. Bush. And they already had the Swift Boat stuff in the can. They wanted John Kerry because they thought they could take him down based on this. And guess what? They did. So anyhow, Karl Rove, the guy who's the architect of these kinds of things, and it's not like he's never lied before. For example, during the 2000 appearance on Nightline, ABC's Nightline, Karl Rove he's waving around a ballot. He says, this is from Cook County, Illinois. Look at this. Just like the butterfly ballot in Florida. Butterfly ballot where you got 8,000 people voting for Pat Buchanan in a largely elderly Jewish neighborhood. Yes, they're going to vote for a guy who's nearly openly anti-Semitic. Just happened to be that the arrow that pointed to Al Gore seemed to point to the hole that you punched to vote for Pat Buchanan. He waves us around and says, see, the same thing in Cook County, Illinois. Nightline. Next night, Ted Koppel says, sorry. The prop was illegitimate. Ted Koppel, ever the diplomat, said, we checked with Cook County in Illinois, and they have not used the butterfly ballot for that election. And indeed, we checked with the Bush campaign, and their response was that they had received bad information. Well, what was that thing he was waving around? Something he made up! Rove forges party invites on opponents' stolen stationery in an early campaign in 1970. Broke into the office of Democratic opponent Alan Dixon. Stole some of Dixon's campaign stationery. Printed phony invitations promising free beer, free food, girls, and a good time. Where did he distribute these things? Who were the folks that he wanted to show up at his opponent's fundraiser? Passed them out at homeless shelters. During the 82 Clement campaign, this is when he found the bug, local DA concluded, Rove had hired the company to debug the office, and that's the same company that had planted the bug. John McCain, he went after John McCain in 2000. McCain operatives in South Carolina accused Karl Rove of spreading rumors against McCain, such as, quote, suggestions that McCain had committed treason while a prisoner of war, had fathered a child by a black prostitute. McCain's slurs included illegitimate children, homosexuality, and a drug-addicted wife. Among the rumors circulated against McCain, this is Karl Rove's fingerprints all over this in 2000 in South Carolina, was that his adopted Bangladeshi daughter, he actually adopted a child who has dark skin from Bangladesh. And Karl Rove is saying that this was actually the child of a liaison with a black woman that McCain, an illegitimate relationship that McCain had, and that McCain was gay, and that he cheated on his wife, and that his wife Cindy was a drug addict. This is the guy who is now in charge of the National Security Council and the National Economic Council as of yesterday. Karl Rove. Karl Rove. Absolutely amazing. In the midst of this, we find things like the Department of Health and Human Services. They're going to cut back on Head Start, so what do? They don't publish the studies that show Head Start is effective. Now, this is Karl Rove writ large. I mean, the entire White House, virtually the entire Republican Party now have become clones of Karl Rove. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
NBC Tonight. Joey's got a new Valentine, whether he likes it or not.
Why'd have to be so charming to the opposite sex?
And it's Valentine's Day for Will and Grace. And special guest, Ed Burns.
Might be my last chance at happiness.
Might be, definitely is.
Followed by another Apprentice First. What could bring both groups into the boardroom?
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
Then on ER, it's an all-out brawl.
Oh my God.
Call security.
Joey, Will and Grace, The Apprentice and ER, all new NBC Tonight.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's a strange old game, you learn it slow. One step forward and it's back to go.
Yes, if Jeff Gannon, you heard that name before. Hey, I'm starting to get some press here, but I'm telling you, if this guy was a Democrat, I'm gonna tell you about it. This is another Karl Rove adventure, if not from Rove. This is certainly in the spirit of Rove. This is a guy who learned his lessons at the feet of Karl Rove, no doubt about that. Would be on Fox News Limbaugh 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Ann Coulter would be calling to have him stoned. I'm sitting here with a photo of him in front of me, handed to me by Louise. I'm Jeff Gannon, ace reporter. Hello, Mr. President. In his underwear, wearing dog tags, with his shaved head and a seductive look on his face. Yes, indeed. running several, I'll explain those to you in just a minute. First, let's take a few phone calls here before our break at the bottom of the hour. And then I have to tell you, this is so typical of this administration. It's all style over substance. It's all propaganda over reality. It's all flash over any content, any meaningful content. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Phil in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind?
Hi. Today is the AT&T Open in Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
And a man who says he has a terrible back problem that he had to use Oxycontin and other drugs because his back is always in pain, is playing that in that tournament, Mr. Limbaugh.
Yeah.
You know, when you swing your hips, when you're playing golf, especially if you're driving or using an iron, I can't think of a better way to throw your back out if you have a bad back.
Well,
and now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
There you go.
Yeah. It was, you know, again, he's going that cart, and they go up and down hills. Okay, that jars the spine. Okay, and twisting your hips, playing golf, if you had a bad back, you couldn't do that.
Yeah, I think everybody knew he didn't have a bad back. Or to the extent that he has a bad back, anybody over 50 has a bad back. I mean, I'm sitting here with a bad back. I broke my back skydiving when I was 21 years old. I don't think I've had 2 days in a row that I haven't had pain in my back, but I'm not taking OxyContin every day. Although the thought has occurred to me. Actually, back when I first injured it, I took painkillers for, I don't know, 3-4 months and saw it coming. I said, you know, this stuff, this is nasty stuff. I'd rather have the pain.
Yeah.
So, but
O'Reilly is crucifying some professor that said something he didn't like in Colorado. And just really every one of these right-wing talk show hosts is crucifying this guy. He's got to be fired, whatever.
Yeah.
But anything that, you know, I mean, it's of no consequence to most people that this guy said something.
Well, the larger issue is that people have forgotten, and I don't think people in the 1950s had forgotten. I think that this is a very recent phenomenon. This is part of the right-wing talk machine. People have forgotten that the whole concept of university, the medieval concept of university, where university came from, out of the age of the Enlightenment, the medieval concept of university was a place where dissenting and unpopular views were aired. And that's something that Bill O'Reilly's not going to tell you about.
No. Their attitude is you can say virtually anything you want as long as you agree with us.
there you go. Yeah.
And when you don't, we're going to crucify you on television until we get rid of you.
Unless your pseudonym is Jeff Gannon and you're running gay websites and you are throwing softball questions to the president, which after we take a call from Armin after this break, I am going to get into in some detail here. I think you're going to find that fascinating.
Right,
Phil, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I always appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to phone in. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program discussing solutions and not false promises.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there?
Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
President George W. Bush has completely eliminated funding for Amtrak in his new budget proposal.
The Bush administration has long been out to dismantle Amtrak, but this is really a new low where they've actually come right out and zeroed out its budget.
Michael Buckley is communications director for the AFL-CIO Transportation Trades Department. He says the TTD believes privatizing the railway is a bad decision.
It's a very reckless and irresponsible policy choice. It would 22,000 workers out of jobs. It would strand millions of passengers throughout the country. It would send many more cars to already congested highways.
The department's president, Edward Witkin, spoke before Congress on Tuesday. He says it seems that Bush believes that if Amtrak is forced into bankruptcy, a new private sector will emerge from its ashes. Buckley says that the reaction from Congress has been encouraging.
And they don't see Amtrak as sort of the inside the beltway political football. They see it as a nuts and bolts part of their community.
Unite Here Local 11 heads back into more talks with eight luxury hotels in the Los Angeles area today as hotel workers struggle to win fair and just contracts. Local 11 President Maria Elena Durazo says that big issues include the cost of health insurance and workloads, and she says the hotels are aggressively anti-worker.
They're taking a very, very aggressive anti-worker campaign in all of the workplaces, and so it is a constant daily battle inside those hotels.
Unite Here is encouraging a boycott of Hyatt, Hilton, and Starwood hotels.
Don't go to these boycotted hotels and support the workers.
For information on the boycott on the web, go to hoteladvisor.org.
The workers are not holding back. They're engaged in this, and they're making a lot of sacrifices to be able to win what is fair.
Bargainers from Unite Here are meeting with representatives from the eight luxury hotels in Los Angeles today.
In the midst of a bitter labor dispute, the U.S. soccer team beat Trinidad and Tobago in its first World Cup qualifying round. A three-week player lockout by the U.S. Soccer Federation ended on January 21st. The players have been without a contract for more than 2 years. The players came to a temporary no-strike agreement with the federation at the end of January. The agreement also gives the players a 38% increase in per-game bonuses.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Unit labor costs are total compensation divided by real economic output. It's the best measure of a worker's share of production. The lower unit labor costs go, the less workers get. As of 2003, unit labor costs were in their most sustained decline in 50 years. Fewer workers turning out more work and falling real wages have combined to drive unit labor costs down. For workers, that means business is producing more with fewer workers working for less money. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, Ira, who insists that he's straight, says to Louise, I got to see this picture. I said, poor Ira here. I said, Ira, do you think he's a stud? Ira says, I'm not. Don't quote me. I'm sorry, Ira. You work hard here. You deserve a lot of credit. You do a great job. We do appreciate it. And I should not harass you like that, should I? Pretty studly picture, though, wasn't it? Welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. This, for those of you who haven't heard already, I mean, it's been all over for a couple days. It's it was in my stack of stuff to get to yesterday. I had a few other things I thought were more important, but even more information is coming out every day. Jeff Gannon is this guy that the White House gave press credentials to and said, sure, come on in. Turns out it wasn't even his real name. Now, you wonder if Mohammed Atta had applied and said, yeah, my name is Jeff Gannon. And then you get into the White House and you're sitting there with the President of the United States and you got these cameras with these long lenses. You ever seen a James Bond movie where one of those cameras isn't quite a camera? Well, apparently the White House didn't care about that because Jeff Gannon was the guy. He was the go-to guy. He was the guy you could always rely on to ask the softball questions. I'll give some examples to you in just a minute. First, 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just want to make a public citizen announcement.
Okay.
Aetna, the health insurer.
Yes, sir.
I want to talk about health insurance in Bush's America. I was watching CNBC, and their stock's up over $5 today, and they're going to double their dividends. And that's the company that changed my insurance policy and did not tell me about it, and I didn't find out till I was in the hospital. And I talked to some really good lawyers, and they told me that there's a lot of health insurance policies out there that simply have on them terms and conditions can be changed with board approval.
Yeah, I got to say, Armin, I got to say, I sympathize with your condition, your situation. I think it's horrible. I think it's terrible. And Aetna is not the only one doing it. So, you know, please, Aetna, don't sue me or Ira. No, it's not even that caveat. I mean, the reality is this is the health insurance industry. I mean, the health insurance industry as a whole is, this is just what they do. I mean, that's just, so, yeah, Ira, good point. Mike in Florida. Boy, it's Florida Day. Three calls from Florida in a row. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Just called to back you up on Dean and John McCain.
Yeah.
I remember during the 2000 primary, you know, Limbaugh, one of the things that kind of turned me off about that guy when I was listening to him, he was making fun of John McCain. He had a little skit in there called McCain's Navy, making him look like a complete moron.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he was given marching orders to get rid of this guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The name of the game in politics is choose your opponent. That choosing your opponent is more important than beating whoever is the opponent. And so, I mean, this is something the Republicans have been doing ever since 72 when Nixon decided that he wanted to run against McGovern instead of Muskie and slip some acid into Muskie's coffee.
And then the other thing is, too, you know, like as McCain is the, you know, for a conservative, I have more respect for him than Bush. I've seen McCain back Sean Hannity into a corner many a times, and he beat him in his own game just with common sense and logic.
Well, John McCain actually has some principles. I was amazed to see him out there campaigning for George W. Bush and George W. kissing him on top of the head. You know, and he must have, Bush either must have threatened him terribly or offered him some incredible promise for McCain to do that. And I suspect that if the past is the future, if past is prologue to the future, Bush will not follow through on that, and McCain is going to end up being harmed by his relationship with Bush, and you're going to see McCain coming back out, and then the righties, the Bushies, the robes and whatnot will try to characterize McCain as a crazy guy. So,
yeah, but the one last thing, and you know, a lot of people sometimes I hear with contemporaries that I work with. On this Iraq thing, the one common thing that they try to pull is cup conversation is, well, are you really happy that McCain is, I mean, not that, that the Saddam, has been deposed? And you're supposed to say no to that. All I say is not at that price.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line. Not at that price. No, sure.
Not at that price. And that they just don't know what to come back on that.
Yeah.
And so you just got to keep on fighting, I guess.
Well said, Mike. We got to keep on fighting and fighting and fighting. And actually, the way to do it, unlike the way Karl Rove does it, with lies, deception, deceit, mistruth, half-truths, is to simply tell the truth. That's the bottom line. Ultimately, this is one of the things that gives me so much faith in this nation and in our political process. Even in the face of all the deception that's out there, the fact that Bloomberg spending almost $100 per voter in New York, whereas his opponent spent something like, $17 per voter. And that's what it's, even with the corruption of money, even with the corruption of lies, like Karl Rove has a 25-year history of, even in the face of all of that, there really is this bottom line reality that ultimately the truth does win out, and I think it will. So, going from Florida, let's go to the other side of the country, Nat in Oregon. Hey, Nat, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I called a little too late yesterday, but have you read that book, Fatal Deception?
I have the book. I'm not, I refresh my memory. I'm, what's...
Yeah, asbestos book about all the asbestos cases in Montana.
No, I haven't read it.
Okay.
I know where it is. I've got a stack of about 60 books sitting next to the bed. I know where it is, but I haven't read it.
Well, I swing a hammer and I do a lot of deconstruction. The house is a reuse of wood and stuff. So I'm ripping down torn ceilings and putting up tiles. And after reading that book, I just thought, man, I got about 20 years to live because there are so many products that have asbestos in it.
About asbestos, yeah. Yeah, this is a horrible thing. I my father has mesothelioma right now from asbestos. He dropped out of college when my mother got pregnant with me, and had to go to work in a steel mill and he worked in a cloud of asbestos. And now here, 50 years later, boom, you know, it's a horrible thing. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And George Bush wants to say, this frivolous asbestos litigation, right? It's killing people. It's killing people.
Yeah,
my father's going in. In fact, he's going in for surgery next Tuesday, on whichever day, the 14th, on Valentine's Day. So if my listeners who are inclined to prayer, please say a prayer for Carl Hartman.
Yeah, that's got to hurt.
Yeah.
Because it's very painful. But yes, they knew about that in the 1890s.
Oh, I know. The first paper that was published officially, like Journal of American Medical Association kind of officially, linking asbestos with mesothelioma, which is a form of cancer that typically from the time of diagnosis to death is about 6 months, lining the lung. The first paper that was published on that was in the 1930s here in the United States. It had been inferred by, epidemiological studies back, as you say, into the 19th century. But they knew. They have known all along and covered it up. W.R. Grace and Company, Halliburton, Dresser Industries. I mean, the two, W.R. Grace and Halliburton are the two big companies right now, the two huge companies who are huge Bush campaign donors who are being hit with these asbestos lawsuits because they killed people intentionally. They hid this stuff. They covered it up. And Bush puts it into the State of the Union address, State of the Union address that he's going to do something about these frivolous asbestos claims, as he calls them. And I heard that, well, in fact, here it is. Let me just share this with you real quick.
And our economy is held back by irresponsible class actions and frivolous asbestos claims.
And I just wanted to barf. If I could have reached through the, don't get me started.
Yeah.
Nat, I appreciate the call. Thanks for bringing up the topic. And the book Fatal Deception. We'll pass it along. Yeah, your phone is breaking up there, too. Anyhow, thanks. I appreciate it. Alan in Pittsburgh is on the line. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yeah, that subject concerns me, too, because I've worked a lot of construction jobs in the past, and I know I've worked with asbestos.
Yeah.
Also, I like to say in the last couple of years, I've talked to a lot of Republicans, and I could talk to them all day about the war and cannot convince them. If I talk to them about the economy, then I could catch their attention, but not about the war.
Yeah, people, there is this thing of my side, right or wrong, Alan, and you see it in sports in particular. I mean, people, it's my team, and yeah, maybe they made a bad draft pick, or maybe they got a lousy guy in there, maybe the coach doesn't know what he's, but it's still my team, so don't put them down. People get that way.
One of the scary parts about it is they think that all Muslims are the same. I talked to a lot of people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and in Germany, they thought there were a lot of folks who said all the Jews were the same and all the gypsies were the same. And back during the Inquisition, there was a time when in England, old Henry VIII, all those Catholics are the same. I mean, it's a never-ending thing. It starts out with actually a very healthy human impulse, and that is the protect the family impulse. This is my family. This is my group. This is my tribe. This is my community. That's a healthy impulse. And then you get demagogues and exploiters who take that very normal human impulse that's so easy to, it's a button that's so easy to push because it's a button that's wired into us for our survival. And they push that button over and over and over again to gain political power and to destroy and to identify some group of us as the other and then use that to destroy people to it's a very, very real problem. Alan, thanks for the call and raising that issue.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you there in Pittsburgh. Oh my. Jeff Gannon. This the latest Roe-vism, we need to come up with a way. Roe-vism is as good a word as any, I think, for this. The latest Roe-vism, go to GOPUSA.com's website. Actually, don't, because you won't find anything from Jeff Gannon there. They have scrubbed it in the last 48 hours. But Google, when you do a Google search, you will find things that are a few days old, because Google updates, you know, they're continuously updating, but sometimes it takes them a week or so to get around to redoing a site. So go to Google and type in GOPUSA.com and Jeff Gannon, and you will find lots and lots and lots of links. But if you click on any of them, what you will get is, sorry, that page doesn't exist. Jeff Gannon is not even his real name. Talon News Service isn't even a real news service. This guy went to a two-day seminar put on by some right-wing cranks that they called a journalism school, and on the basis of this credential, he gets invited to the White House press conferences where George W. Bush and his various minions love to ask this guy questions. Love to ask him questions. And what does he do? He quotes Rush Limbaugh as if it was truth. Here's Jeff Gannon at the White House quoting as if it was a news story, quoting Rush Limbaugh.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Senate Democratic leaders have painted a very bleak picture of the U.S. economy. Harry Reid was talking about soup lines, and Hillary Clinton...
Now, that's the Harry Reid soup lines. Never happened. It's a total lie. Rush Limbaugh made it up and put it on his program. He's now quoting Limbaugh. Anyhow, here we continue.
...was talking about the economy being on the verge of collapse. Yet, in the same breath, they say that Social Security is rock solid and there's no crisis there. How are you going to work? You've said you're going to reach out to these people. How are you going to work with people who seem to have divorced themselves from reality?
How are you going to work with people who seem to have divorced themselves from reality? This is a question. Do you get it? Do you get what's going on? I mean, this is the disinformation machine. The Leadership Institute Broadcast School of Journalism. Yeah, this is the two-day thing. His real name is not Jeff Gannon. We'll get to that in just a second. Jeff seems to be this from the World O. I'm not even going to say it on the air. It's from a salon blog. Jeff seems to be your basic loser who's tried a lot of dead-end jobs, get-rich-quick schemes, and then finally, despite any previous experience in journalism, got some right-wing wingnut group with possible ties to the GOP to pay his salary. Now he's a White House reporter. His real name apparently is James Dale Guckert, G-U-C-K-E-R-T. Age 47, a.k.a. Jim Dale Guckert. And he runs these websites for people looking for gay guys who look military. In fact, some even suggest that it may be a prostitution thing that he's doing, but who knows? I can't say that for a fact. He was, again, and was also given, this is from the New York Daily News today, a conservative ringer who was given a press pass to the White House and lobbed softball questions of President Bush quit yesterday. He was given a classified CIA memo outing Valerie Plame that 600 days ago today. 600 days ago today. You may recall treason, in my opinion. It's this George W. Bush Are we going to find the leaker here in the White House?
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
But Jeff Gannon was helping spread the story around, even if George is going to cover it up. Amazing, amazing stuff. Media Matters for America has just page after page after page. Mr. McClellan, go ahead, Jeff. You got one. Mr. McClellan, go ahead, Jeff. The president, go ahead, Jeff. Mr. McClellan, two questions a day. Go ahead, Jeff. Over and over and over again. His news reports lifted just from the GOP talking points. 10 minutes before the hour.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
In some parts of the world, a shortage of protein leads to an abundance of poaching. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People and wildlife are suffering from severe overfishing in the waters of West Africa. Researchers say the fishery has been depleted as a result of overexploitation, and people can no longer rely on fish to get cheap protein into their diets. People are turning to animal meat as a replacement, and they're getting it by poaching in wildlife reserves. Justin Prechers is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish populations off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. Ghana is on Africa's Atlantic coast, and people there have depended on fish for generations. Prechers says the importance of this fishery stretches from the Atlantic coast to the edge of the Sahara Desert.
It's actually when you get much further inland, in some cases even into sub-desert or desert communities, hundreds, in some cases 1,000 miles from the coast, where you realize that it's these smoked or dried fish, particularly these small sardines and anchovy-type things, that are the primary source of animal protein. And they're the cheapest. They're still, despite the cost of getting these fish transported all the way out to these villages in the middle of nowhere, they're still the cheapest source of animal protein around.
Prechere says the source of protein and economic livelihood is disappearing because of overfishing. He says people all over West Africa are now hunting in game reserves to get protein from meat. His work shows that hunting has been hard on herds of wild animals that include elephants, lions, and leopards. Prechere published his findings last November in the journal Science. He says these problems occur around the world, and we need to find new ways to give people cheap protein that doesn't come from fish or other animals in the wild. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They seek him here.
It's Karl Rove.
They seek him there.
No, it's Karl Rove.
His clothes are loud.
Oh, no, it's Jeff Gannon.
But never squelch.
But he's wearing no clothes. Some of Jeff Gannon's questions at White House press conferences, and I quote, "Doesn't Joe Wilson owe the president in America an apology for his deception and his own intelligence failure?" Another one, McClellan. Go ahead, Jeff, you had one. Gannon. "And doesn't that, combined with the now proven al-Qaeda link between Iraq, between Saddam Hussein and the terrorist organization, unequivocally make the case for going to war in Iraq?" These softball questions, these aren't even softball questions. This is propaganda masquerading as journalism on nationally televised news conferences. Are you getting it? They're taking our tax dollars and putting out phony reporters, giving them money to Armstrong Williams and whatnot, and you got these right-wing groups putting phony people in, pretending that they're journalists, and the White House obviously has vetted this. I mean, you don't get in to sit with the president with funny-looking pieces of equipment like cameras with long lenses and things that can't go through X-ray machines because it'll destroy the film without having some pretty solid credentials. 1-866-889-8894. Jason in Kentucky on the line. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Yeah, sir. I wanted to talk about that thing that happened up in Fargo there.
Yes.
Do not fit list.
I'm not sure what you're speaking of.
Is that an elected official up in Fargo wasn't allowed to see the president? He was put on the do not admit list.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Somebody, yes, who had an invitation to go to the president's gig, and then the Republican Party said, no, he can't go because he worked with Ed Schultz, I think. Yeah.
Yes. I'm a deputy sheriff in the state of Kentucky here, and Secret Service came down when Bush was coming around for his reelection campaign. The Secret Service came around, and we have a Republican sheriff now. We did have a Democrat, but we have a Republican now. And I got cleared, along with every other officer who worked street patrol around where he was having his campaign thing at.
Right.
A day before me and another officer, day before he showed up, we were put on desk duty.
Because you're Democrats?
Well, we were never told the reason. We were told that there was a change in duty status on us, and we had to work the desk.
Amazing. Jason, I'm out of time, but I'm thanks for the report. I appreciate it. I got to tell you, it's Bubble Boy. George W. Bush, he's living in a bubble. I mean, it's like the kid who's afraid of viruses. This one's afraid of criticism. No one can speak ill of him. He doesn't allow people to speak poorly of him in his cabinet meetings now. You can't question or challenge the president of the cabinet. He's gotten rid of all the naysayers, all one of them, Colin Powell. This is not good for America.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A union election is set for February 25th at a Walmart tire and auto service store in Loveland, Colorado. The workers there would be the first Walmart workers in the U.S. to unionize if the United Food and Commercial Workers are successful. Norberto Ricardo is the UFCW organizer in Loveland. He believes the workers will win, but he says Walmart is trying to intimidate its workers into not joining unions. Ricardo says it's important to organize Walmart because it pays very low wages, doesn't provide adequate benefits, and drags down wages of other companies. He would like to see workers exercise their rights to organize without fear.
I would like for all these employees from Walmart to reunite together and not to be afraid and leave the fear somewhere else and go forward with the process to organize and become one union.
Federal employees from the Department of Defense marched on Capitol Hill yesterday in protest of a proposed personnel regulation overhaul. American Federation of Government Employees President John Sweeney told the hundreds of rallying employees that the National Security Personnel System will jeopardize public safety and national security by taking away employee protections that allow workers to speak freely when they see wrongdoing or mismanagement. The AFGE and other unions representing government employees are planning to file a lawsuit. The decision to implement similar changes at the Department of Homeland Security has already led to one lawsuit, saying that the changes undermine the constitutional right of due process. AFGE General Counsel Mark Roth said of the DHS changes in a press release that managers will have free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions.
New York City's Hudson Yards development has the potential to create thousands of jobs, many of them union jobs, so a coalition of labor and business groups is supporting it. There's opposition, though, from city community groups. Jim Whalen is head of the Hudson Yards Coalition, a labor-led group supporting the development.
What the Hudson Yards plan really represents is a long-term plan that is going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs for New Yorkers on all income levels.
Critics of the development and the sports stadium for the Jets that comes with it say the development is too dense and will cost the city more than $3 billion with an adverse impact on the West Side. Whalen, though, says the stadium and the union jobs it creates is good for New York.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Union membership dropped slightly in 2004. New numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics say that union membership dropped to 12.5% of all workers nationwide. The biggest drops were in Alaska, Illinois, and Missouri, with the major gains being in New York and Minnesota. Almost half of all union membership is concentrated in six states: California, New York, Michigan, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
George W., inhaling the fumes of his own hubris, has been claiming that he not only won the presidential election, but also won a mandate for his policies, including his war in Iraq and his plan to undo our Social Security program. We had an accountability moment That's called the 2004 elections, Bush recently smirked to reporters. Interesting if true, but it's not. Sorry to pop that little bubble your handlers keep you in, George, but polls now show that you're starting your second term with no mandate, with strong disapproval of your policies in Iraq, and with the public dubious about your leadership on the domestic front. In fact, your job approval rating is an embarrassingly low 49%. Contrast that to the 60% approval for Clinton and 62% for Reagan when they began their second terms. Only Richard Nixon started his second term with a lower job approval rating than you. One key measure of presidential performance is the public's sense of whether America is on the right track. Bad news again. 56% say the country is on the wrong track, the worst rating for Bush since he's been in office. His war? 58% disapprove of his handling of it. 75% say he has no credible exit strategy. A majority says George routinely exaggerates about conditions there, and 53% say his war will not be worth the loss of American lives. On his number one domestic issue, privatizing Social Security, 55% disapprove, rising to 70% when people learn that his plan will cut benefits by a third. This is Jim Hightower saying, George might have won the popularity contest last fall, but his policies are unpopular. This is no time for Democrats in Congress to cave in, wailing that Bush is too popular to oppose. Buck up, buckos. People want you to fight this elitist, extremist regime.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365, cable radio network in 29 states, and on it goes. We're back. In the last hour, we were talking about, a whole variety of things. Karl Rove, Jeff Gannon, all these Republicans who are pretending to be something they're not. So it seems a very useful segue, shall we say. This being the second hour of Thursday, of our Thursday program, every Thursday in our second hour, the first segment of our second hour, we try to bring you something that is a little beyond just normal politics. Something that you didn't know that you didn't know. Maybe you didn't even know that you needed to know. You didn't know that you didn't know about. Maybe even...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. Brooke Kroger has an interesting take on when people can't be who they are. She's written a book called Passing. She's previously had written a book called Daredevil Reporter, Feminist, and Fanny, The Talent for Success of Writer Fanny Hurst, and is a foreign correspondent and editor. Brooke, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Glad to have you here. Your book talks in really, I think, rather compassionate terms. I found it most interesting both as social commentary and as stories of people in some ways rising above and in some ways getting around or under these issues of societal difficulties or internal personal
belief structures that shut people down. Tell us a little bit about this. What is the passing?
Passing is an old term. It's actually an American term that came out of the race struggle, really, when very light-skinned African Americans would pass into whiteness. And that's where the term originally came from, though in later times it's been applied to, of course, that situation, which still exists, not in the same way it did before civil rights, but certainly still persists. And gay for straight, Jewish for Gentile, lower class for upper class, I mean, 1,000 different forms.
Yeah, well, in fact, you have a story about a black man passing for a white Jew, a working class Hispanic passing for someone who's more privileged, a gay seminary student passing for straight. Did each one of these individuals feel they had a choice of forfeiting their dreams or passing in order to achieve their dreams, or is it something deeper than that?
Each story tells the reason I use the six stories I used, because they're all very different, but very much the same. They all happen in very different social contexts, and they all pass for different reasons. Passing usually happens for safety. That's one very good reason for passing, for adventure, for opportunity. And each of these represents one of those, or they represent passing inadvertently, is the case of the white woman who was taken for black, and or they happen by design for, as I said, for opportunity. They happen for a number of reasons. They happen part-time, full-time, from time to time. So each one, cumulatively, you get a sense for what passing is like in our time.
Yeah.
When one might think it wasn't as common as it was previously.
What would you say is generally the outcome at the level of the person, of living a life that is not, well, of passing, however, you know.
Well, in a lot of cases, it provided opportunities that otherwise would not have existed. For instance, the gay person, the gay naval officer, who absolutely had no choice but to pass as straight, or she couldn't have been in the Navy. It's very simple. So in those cases, passing will serve the possibility of doing something that otherwise would be forbidden. The same was true for the seminary student who could not have been gay and done what he had done, and yet this is something he had dreamed to do all his life and really in every possible other regard was a perfect candidate for. So that's very simple. I mean, you literally would have to make another choice about your life.
Right. But at what price? I mean, at what level are people tortured by the fact that they're...
Well, the lying gets everybody down.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult. And in each case that I used, the passing took place for a period of time to get through a particular social situation. And then the individuals were able to move on.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a burden in this. And if you read it about passing in literature, there's almost always the accompanying issue of how the person deals with the subterfuge. The necessity for being deceitful. It never rests easy on anyone.
Yeah.
And yet sometimes it's really the only thing one can do, especially if you see yourself as someone as a vanguard of change.
Yeah,
someone who's really trying to change the way certain parts of our society are fashioned.
Yeah, although there are really two other areas that are very much not what you're talking about, but people may confuse. And mm-hmm. one is people reinventing themselves. Just deciding to change careers, for example, not necessarily lying about what they've done or what they've been in the past, but just doing something.
This is a different thing. This really, the subjects I focused on had to do with people who found themselves in situations where in order to achieve extremely ordinary desired ends, things that you or I could do with no problem, had to recreate themselves because of prejudices within the society that would have stopped them for reasons that had nothing to do with their ability, their competence, the normal, their talent,
right?
Simply because of their skin color or their sexual orientation or something else.
Right. Well, okay. So I mentioned there's two other things that are not what you're talking about specifically. One being people reinventing themselves. The other being people who pathologically reinvent themselves. The movie,
right.
the movie that
Leonardo DiCaprio starred in. I don't recall the title of it.
Catch Me If You Can.
That's right. Catch Me If You Can.
Exactly. And this is exactly. And those are or you know, the terrorist next door who's making bombs and borrowing your sugar. I mean, you know, these are not cases I dealt with.
Right.
And obviously, passing can be used for a nefarious purpose. But, I was really more interested in people who used it to bypass injustice.
Right, but very often that category that I was describing, as opposed to the ones that you describe in your book, Passing, mm-hmm. are coming out of a psychological pathology. They're coming out of a sickness as opposed to a desire to adapt. Is that
absolutely
okay?
Have you ever known anyone who does that? I have known people who invent their background, invent where they went to school, and almost can't help themselves.
That's oh, yeah, yeah. I have known one person in my life who we referred to him as a compulsive liar. I mean, there actually is a name for it
that I used to know, and I'm trying to think if I can remember. It's like pseudophantasia or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember the word now. But anyway, there's actually a word for it. It's a condition.
Yeah, but he would just come up with these stories. And of course, there have been parodies, would you believe, it's been a thing of comedy. Now, I don't know to the extent to which you've been following the news, but in the last few days, there has been, actually it's taken about a week for this story to break because it didn't have the big right-wing talking machine behind it, you know, echoing it. There's this guy whose pseudonym is Jeff Gannon, who got press credentials into the White House a few years ago.
Oh, I read about that this morning.
Exactly.
Yes.
And in every
How
press
did that
conference.
Happen?
Well, this is I'm just curious about your take on this. This guy has apparently been running, or the company that is at the same address that he's at has been running some man-to-man military let's get together and hook up type of websites which may be prostitution or may just be let's get together and have fun. He's got, you know, pictures of himself looking very military, very studly in his underwear on the web, in his other identity, in his real identity. And then in his phony identity, he attended a two-day journalism school run by a right-wing group, and that's his credential. And Karl Rove and Ari Fleischer and George W. Bush not only let him into the White House, but whenever Bush is starting to get hard questions or Fleischer is starting to get hard questions, or Scotty McClellan now, start to get tough questions, they always go to him, and he can be relied upon to not just give a question, not just ask a question, but preface it with a two or three sentence attack on the Democrat. You know, now that we know that John Kerry has lied about his service in Vietnam, what do you think of his moral stance? These kinds of things, you know, that's not, I just made that up, but I just read several of them on the air, and they're actually worse than that. How what's going on here? Is this just an opportunist? Is this just somebody who said, hey, you know, the right wing is passing out money to left and right to all kinds of folks. Here's a guy who's apparently gay, or at least, you know, has a strong affiliation with the gay community, who is aggressively embracing a bunch that are anti-gay would be gentle to say it. This is more than just passing. I mean, this is hypocrisy, is it not?
I would not count this. I mean, I guess it is a form of, you know, you would be passing as a journalist. You would be, you know, taking on a different identity for whatever purpose. I suppose that you could certainly talk about that as a type of passing. It's not what I discuss in my book. I'm not really interested in those people.
Yeah.
But
right.
In this case, goodness.
To relate it back to the folks in your book, then, to what extent did the folks in your book passing, did any of them have to be in situations where they had to be externally, they had to be hypocrites, right, where your gay naval officer had to say, oh, that's damn gay, you know, that kind of thing?
She didn't have to do that. I mean, she really had to go through before a military tribunal at a certain point, which was, you know, horrific and put her in a very, very difficult position.
Right.
The seminarian managed to avoid anything like that.
I'm curious.
But came close several times.
I'm curious in particular. One of the hooks of the book was about a black man passing as a white Jew. Tell me.
Well, you know, but he was actually sort of Jewish.
The
background is this. Well, yeah, and this happened. And it's important for that story to know that he was in junior high school, high school, and early college. It is a bit of a coming-of-age story in that sense. But he was a young man who was the son of a very prominent African-American journalist and a white Jewish mother. But the mother left at birth, So she was never involved with him at all. I mean, really, by the time he was 1 or 2 months old, she was out of his life.
But nonetheless, Judaism is matrilineal, so he was technically Jewish.
So technically he was Jewish, though he had no background. And his own personal identification was African-American.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you ask, who are you? Who is someone? How do you determine identity? Part of it is who we understand ourselves to be. I mean, in large part, it's also who other people understand us to be.
Right.
So anyone knowing this young man, his name was David Matthews, would immediately assume and understand that he was African-American, though his appearance was very, very ambiguous, especially in his youth.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So,
it reminds me of the, I just wrote a book about Jefferson. Apparently, two of the daughters that he and Sally Hemings had, he married off to white men, one in New York and one in Boston, who thought that they were white, who had no idea. You know, and so this is something that's been going on for a long, long time.
Absolutely. I know about the Hemings family. It's fascinating to see their pictures.
Yeah, it is. Brooke Kroeger, the author of Passing, When People Can't Be Who They Are. Brooke, thanks a lot for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
I truly
thanks.
Appreciate it. Have a great day. Bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. More politics right after this.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
NBC Tonight. Joey's got a new Valentine, whether he likes it or not.
Why'd have to be so charming to the opposite sex?
And it's Valentine's Day for Will and Grace. And special guest, Ed Burns.
Might be my last chance at happiness.
Might be, definitely is.
Followed by another Apprentice First. What could bring both groups into the boardroom?
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
Then on ER, it's an all-out brawl.
Oh, my God.
Call security.
Joey, Will and Grace, The Apprentice and ER, all new NBC Tonight.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'll take you there.
Oh, yeah, we'll take you there to democracy. Back to a nation that actually cares for its people, that's actually respected around the world. That actually holds the ideals of freedom and egalitarianism. And lives them out. What a radical notion. It's 25 minutes past the hour of the second hour of our program. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, our regular report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria.
Hey.
What's happening in the nation's capital there in the belly of the beast?
Well, there are a lot of hearings going on Capitol Hill today. It's one of those big days. You've got the Senate Armed Services Committee. You've got hearings on the budget, putting various military types through their paces as they try to figure that out. And then also, Senator Ted Kennedy, who is on the Senate Judiciary Committee, they're having a hearing today about bankruptcy protection. There's a Bankruptcy Protection and Consumer Protection Act of 2005. And he wants put in there an amendment that will protect families who have high medical costs when they go bankrupt.
Oh,
as you know, information just came out recently, although some of us, I'm sure you have known for some considerable time as I have, that a huge amount of people who declare bankruptcy do so because of medical costs, credit card bills.
56% of all bankruptcies are the result of medical bills, and more than three-quarters of those people have health insurance. And they still get wiped
really
out.
Absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
So he wants a provision in there that will protect them. At the moment, the way it is written, if you have credit card debt, it's somehow exempt from your personal bankruptcy protection.
Hmm.
Which is very interesting. And he's saying that he says, quote, for those who are bankrupted by illness, he said, we owe them the chance to start over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there have been
so
many changes since the 70s in the bankruptcy law. Every time it makes the bankruptcy laws more favorable to corporations so they can continue to operate. I mean, look at all the companies that are in bankruptcy right now that are still doing business.
They almost don't call it bankruptcy anymore. They call it reorganization or words like
right.
that make it sound like
right.
it wasn't going, but they
right.
went bankrupt.
Right. But if you're but if you're a human being, they're going to nail you to the wall, suck you dry, take every last little drop of blood and, you know, Anyhow. Okay. So what else is going on?
Well, meantime, the president is out of town. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi is fairly ticked off. She met reporters earlier on today, and she says that the president's budget is dishonest and immoral. She said it doesn't include the cost of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan or social security. And she also said it's immoral because it's giving tax breaks to those making more than $500,000 a year. Again, you know, something that I'm sure you knew about, but she's very much going on the record with this and being very, very outspoken.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Office of Management and Budget Director, Josh Bolten, who's been all over Capitol Hill all this week, this time talking about Medicare. Congress has basically been wanting to have the government buy drugs directly from manufacturers.
Right.
And he's saying, no, that cannot happen. And this will stifle research and development. An argument that many have said, wait a second, the amount that's spent on research development compared with the amount that's spent on promoting these drugs is
most of the research and development is actually paid for with taxpayer dollars through National Institutes of Mental Health. They spend more on advertising their research and their products than they do on developing them. What Bolten is really saying is, hey, we got our campaign contributions from these guys. We're not going to take away their money.
That's right. That is what's being said. And, of course, also many members of Congress got campaign contributions, but somehow they've managed to find the courage to turn around and say, no, this time, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and they're not going to get campaign contributions next time around.
I mean, probably not.
These industries, they know which side their bread is buttered on.
Yes, indeed.
They used to call this bribery and influencing, and now we euphemistically call it lobbying, but it's still bribery and influencing. Amazing.
It truly is.
That's
Washington today.
Yep. Victoria, thanks so much for the report.
Thank you. Always great
to hear from you folks at Talk Radio News Service. Give our very best to everybody else there, and we will see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon, Victoria. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where reason is our lifestyle choice.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
President George W. Bush has completely eliminated funding for Amtrak in his new budget proposal.
The Bush administration has long been out to dismantle Amtrak. But this is really a new low where they've actually come right out and zeroed out its budget.
Michael Buckley is communications director for the AFL-CIO Transportation Trades Department. He says the TTD believes privatizing the railway is a bad decision.
It's a very reckless and irresponsible policy choice. It would put 22,000 workers out of jobs. It would strand millions of passengers throughout the country. It would send many more cars to already congested highways.
The department's president, Edward Witkin, spoke before Congress on Tuesday. He says it seems that Bush believes that if Amtrak is forced into bankruptcy, a new private sector will emerge from its ashes. Buckley says that the reaction from Congress has been encouraging.
And they don't see Amtrak as sort of the inside the beltway political football. They see it as a nuts and bolts part of their community.
Unite Here Local 11 heads back into more talks with eight luxury hotels in the Los Angeles area today as hotel workers struggle to win fair and just contracts. Local 11 president Maria Elena Terrazo says that big issues include the cost of health insurance and workloads, and she says the hotels are aggressively anti-worker.
They're taking a very, very aggressive anti-worker campaign in all of the workplaces, and so it is a constant daily battle inside those hotels.
Unite Here is encouraging a boycott of Hyatt, Hilton, and Starwood hotels.
Don't go to these boycotted hotels and support the workers.
For information on the boycott on the web, go to hoteladvisor.org.
The workers are not holding back. They're engaged in this, and they're making a lot of sacrifices to be able to win what is fair.
Bargainers from Unite Here are meeting with representatives from the eight luxury hotels in Los Angeles today.
In the midst of a bitter labor dispute, the U.S. soccer team beat Trinidad and Tobago in its first World Cup qualifying round. A three-week player lockout by the U.S. Soccer Federation ended on January 21st. The players have been without a contract for more than 2 years. The players came to a temporary no-strike agreement with the federation at the end of January. The agreement also gives the players a 38% increase in per-game bonuses.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Unit labor costs are total compensation divided by real economic output. It's the best measure of a worker's share of production. The lower unit labor costs go, the less workers get. As of 2003, unit labor costs were in their most sustained decline in 50 years. Fewer workers turning out more work and falling real wages have combined to drive unit labor costs down. For workers, that means business is producing more with fewer workers working for less money. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Shake it up, America. tell the truth, win the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I have a zoology update here from Diana, one of our listeners. Share that with you in just a moment. But first, Peter in Tallahassee, Florida has been patiently waiting on the line for some time. Peter, thank you so much for waiting. Welcome
to
the program.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you taking my call. You know, Tom, I doubt I'm the only one of your listeners or Randy's listeners or Mike's listeners that feels this way. And I'm turning to you for a little advice. I guess what it boils down to is I'm desperately in need of a pep talk, and I'm hoping that you can do that for us. The reason is, you know, day after day, another foul stench erupts from the White House. The latest is this Gannon routine, and then, you know, you're more in tune with it than I am. But, you know, but yet the media that reaches the ignorant multitude never touches any of it. And it's like, you know, we keep hearing more and more, and it's like sometimes, you know, a fellow feels kind of hopeless, like you're, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm suicidal or desperate or ready to climb up on a rooftop with an Uzi. It's just that, you know, it's just one of those days where it's hard to take it. Do you know what I'm saying, Tom?
Well, I for sure I do, and I can tell you in the week or two after the last election, we had calls like yours back to back. I felt like I had to put my psychotherapist hat back on, although my license here in Vermont has expired for 2 years now, and do online therapy. Peter, the best treatment. The best response to despair, to depression, to challenge is to do something. And you look back in history and you look at the people. I mean, consider the challenges that we're facing right now. You've got corporate controlled media. You've got, you know, the House, the Senate, the White House, the Supreme Court taken over by cons. People willing to lie and cheat and steal their way in. And it seems bad. I'm telling you, for women in this country, for more than half of the history of this country, it was worse. For African Americans in this country, from the founding of this country till today, it's worse. And so, you know, and what has happened is that the changes have come about as the result of people taking the kind of feelings that you're expressing right now, the, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, look at how terrible this is, and yeah, turning them into action. And so my encouragement to you, my suggestion to you, is to get active, to join Democracy for America and show up at one of the meetups that they have. Join the local Democratic Party or even the Republican Party if you can handle it.
Yeah.
Join the Green Party as well, because the Green Party is doing great work on the ground. They're working on these initiatives for instant runoff voting. Show up, participate, get active. And what you'll find, the amazing thing that you will discover, Peter, is that there is just a huge network of people all over the United States. I am convinced, frankly, and this puts me in the conspiracy nut category, and I know that, and I will acknowledge it right off the bat, but I am convinced that if we actually had voting machines that weren't rigged, and if we didn't have secretaries of state like Ken Blackwell who configured things, that Republicans would be the minority that they are rather than the majority, and that day will come. And that people are waking up. I mean, you see, just liberal talk radio is one example, spreading across America. This show is growing like crazy. We just got an email from we've got one of our new web stations. We're also on, you know, radio stations all over the country. But this from American-FM.org. Tom Hartman continues. They have a wonderful response from Live 365 listeners. My ratings have exploded. I've had to upgrade my servers, right? I mean,
great.
This is... So it is, and I'm not saying that like waving my own flag. The point is that this is a symptom of something larger, which is people are waking up. In some ways, George W. Bush becoming president 5 years ago was a blessing for us in that it prior to that time, they wore this mask and everybody thought, oh, they're just friendly folks. They're a little eccentric, but they're just friendly folks. And they've taken the mask off. And we're able to see what kind of horrors are behind there. And the reality of their agenda is being confronted, and their overreaching is being confronted. And yes, the cost is horrible. I mean, 100,000 people dead in Iraq, 10,000, 14,000 American, 1,400 rather American soldiers, 10,000 wounded. Those are horrible things. And yet, I got to say, Peter, America is waking up, and it's going to be people like you and me who are going to bring about the change, and not me as the talk show host, but me as the guy who shows up for that Democracy for America meeting, or goes, there's a little club here, a little community. There's like 8 or 10 people get together and read a book every month and talk about politics. And this is where change happens. It always begins at the ground level down and moves up. It never happens that you know, Louis XVI goes, oh, gee, I've been a terrible king. I think I need to wake up. No, I'm sorry. You know, it's started at the bottom. You know, Robespierre had been not that he turned out well in the end, but, you know, he had been a law student. It always begins from the bottom up. That's us. So my comment to you, Peter, is tag, you're it.
Tom, that's great advice to just know this stuff and not do anything but sit and know is the key to mental illness, I suppose.
Well, it is, and there are a few talk show hosts, and there are a few folks. I don't want to single out talk show hosts, but there are some people who really just want to complain, and I find that toxic, frankly. I can't listen to it, and I try not to hang out with people like that. And I don't think that Randy, by the way, you mentioned her, I don't think that she's one of them. She is very, very into asking people, what are you going to do, and get active out there. And there's some very good talk show hosts who are on the left who are encouraging people to get active and who are encouraging people to get out there and make change happen. And I think one of the areas where the right has been successful is that Limbaugh and Hannity and these guys, they don't just sit around complaining about liberals. They tell people what to do. They have specific suggestions. You know, call your senator, call your congressman. Here's the phone number, by the way, for Congress. You can start right now. Area code 202-224-3121. That's the main switchboard. You can ask for anybody from the president to your congressman. 202-224-3121. Take one issue, politely call up and say, you know, I'm very concerned about this issue. Would you please do something about it? And they actually, when people go to the trouble to call, that's worth 1,000 emails. So, step by step, write a letter to the editor of the newspaper. The American Revolution was brought about in large part by two things, pamphleteers and committees of correspondence. If it weren't for those two things, the revolution wouldn't have happened. And today's modern, and pamphleteers, they'd go out in the middle of the night and stick things up on trees, you know, pamphlets. And today, the pamphleteers are folks like you and me who pass along emails or websites or the bloggers, you know. But you get something in email and you think, hey, this is really strong. You see an article that somebody's written. This is really good. Forward along to 50 people. Be one of those pamphleteers. The committees of correspondence that helped create the American Revolution are one of the largely unknown and unsung heroes, set of heroes of the American Revolution. It was mostly women. And what they did was they would meet periodically and they would get together and they would write letters to the editors of newspapers. And they would do them in, back then you had to do it in almost a coded language. They would almost be talking about things that had seemingly nothing to do with politics. Because this was, you know, King George ran the country. But everybody realized that it was code for, hey, guys, it's time for a revolution. We've had enough of this stuff. And so I encourage you to write letters to the editor. In fact, one of the comments that Bernie Sanders made, he's our regular guest on this program every Friday,
I've heard him.
The congressman. One of the comments that he made was that members of Congress, very often, the first thing they read in a newspaper are the letters to the editor. Now, maybe a lot of other readers don't read them. You know, I don't tend to read the letters to the editor all that much. You know, I look at them from time to time. But the elected officials read them religiously because they see those as the voice of the people. Write letters to the editor of your newspaper, your local newspaper, your national newspapers, too. So there's a whole pile of stuff for you. Okay, Peter?
Thank you, Tom. That's very helpful. And keep up the good work.
I will. And you, too. Like I said, tag, you're it. Carry it on.
Thanks, Tom. Bye. Okay.
Do good. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. John in Boston, Illinois. In Boston, Illinois. Tim in Illinois is up next. John in Boston, Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better.
I really wish you were on 24 hours a day.
Well, actually, what do you call it? WhiteRoseSociety.org now has a stream where they recycle this three-hour program 24 hours a day.
Wow, that's great. That's great news.
365 days a year.
I read something that's really distressing. It was in the New York Times that Tuesday, and it had to do with Americans leaving for Canada. The article stated that the Canadian immigration website is receiving upwards from 150,000 hits per week,
yeah,
as opposed to 20,000 before this past November election.
Yeah.
It also appears from this information that the inquiries are from individuals with, top-of-the-line educations. They own their own businesses. They vote regularly here in our country. They're Americans and have all the attributes, that our country needs to keep growing.
Yeah,
what do you think about that?
Well, it's the same thing that happened in Germany in the 30s as a more progressively, this was before Hitler's administration became so really and truly scary, but it was, people could see the handwriting on the wall. As authoritarian administrations rise in power, as anti-science administrations rise in power, as anti-dissent administrations rise in power, as the media is taken captive, intelligent, well-educated people look around and say, okay, I got two choices. I got three choices. One, I can try and hang on and make it through. Milton Mayer chronicles those in his book, They Thought They Were Free, which I've read pieces of here on this program and written about. It doesn't always work, you know, as Pastor Niemeyer told us. You know, first they came for the, you know, et cetera. And secondly, they can choose to fight back, which is the WhiteRoseSociety.org website is named after the White Rose Society, which was a group of college students who defied Hitler. And most of them were murdered in very horrific ways, and yet the tradition of the White Rose Society lives on. And the third is they leave town. And I think, frankly, that third strategy is the least useful. We need folks in this country who are intelligent, who are articulate, and are politically active, and can keep this country together. Unfortunately, the policies of this administration are creating a terrible brain drain, and it's a tragic commentary on the state of both the Bush administration. Well, let's leave it at that.
It is really a tragedy. And it also stated, too, I don't think it was the same article that I read this in, but it said that Canada is third behind Australia and Europe as the destinations for Americans to go.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's really scary.
We saw the same thing in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, as the Vietnam War was getting very, very, very bad. And the regime, you know, particularly the first 2 years of the Nixon regime, were pretty repressive, frankly.
What do you think about the old saying that a country usually lasts, you know, like 200 years, and then there's a major change, like in Rome?
Yeah.
Do you believe in that theory?
No, I don't think the things are carved in stone. There are cycles to history. There are cycles within generations. In fact, there's a book by Strauss and Howe called The Fourth Turning, which if you have any interest in this, I strongly recommend you read. I wrote a lengthy description of it. If you go to buzzflash.com and read, you know, every month I do a Tom Hartman's Thinking Person Book of the Month.
Yes.
And they have an archive of all the ones that I've done before. And I did The Fourth Turning back about 6 months ago. It's a brilliant book about the cycles, you know, that we go through. And they take it all the way back to the War of the Roses in the 16th century.
Wow.
But I am not one of these folks who are convinced that simply because the United States has been around more than 200 years, we're doomed. I don't buy it. It didn't happen. Actually, Greece lasted longer than that, and Greece was a very different form of government. The governments in China have lasted thousands of years. No, mm-hmm. I don't buy it. What I believe is that we need to return to the foundational ideals of the founders of this country, egalitarian democracy, where we the people are the rulers, and of course minorities are protected. That's why you call it a republic.
Right.
And we can do that. I think it's burned into our DNA. I think the reason why Germany flipped so quickly, why they embraced Hitler so quickly, was because they'd only had about a 10 or 15 year experience with democracy.
Right.
They had a 1,000 year history of kings, and so it was easy to go back to a strongman king. It's a very different situation here in the United States of America, and that's what gives me tremendous hope.
Oh, John, thank you very much, Tom.
John, got to move along. Right, thank you bye-bye. For the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tim in Illinois on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the dose of sanity.
There you go. Your daily minimum adult requirement of sanity here.
I got a couple of bits today. First on propaganda, and then on Walmart. In keeping with the Gannon in the wake of the Gannon revelations, I have now learned that the Pentagon Channel is going to be picked up by the Dish Network and is going out to 11 million homes nationwide, 24/7.
Oh, my.
How's that for your tax dollars at work?
Oh, my. Well, you know, you wonder to what extent that may violate the laws that make it illegal for government agencies to propagate propaganda within the United States. I mean, the Voice of America overseas used to have to configure their transmitters so that it was hard to receive it inside the United States because it was against the law for the government to push propaganda in the United States. This is why the whole Armstrong-Williams thing, this is a scandal. If Democrats controlled the House or Senate, somebody would be in prison right now. because and not Armstrong Williams. He just took the money. The crime is passing it out.
Well, the first thought I had is I just wonder how much influence Karl Rove is going to have on the Pentagon Channel.
Yeah.
The Walmart news is interesting as well, and maybe this is not news. But there's only one Walmart store in the world that has unionized labor, and it's in Canada.
Yeah, they don't have unionized labor yet. They voted to unionize, and now right. Walmart is shutting it down.
That's right. And today I looked into that to see what quote I could gather from Walmart about why they're doing that. And, of course, they're saying, the union's demands are unreasonable. But the quote is amusing. Here's here's the quote from the Walmart spokesman.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, in our view, the union demands fail to appreciate the fragile conditions of the store.
of one of the most profitable corporations on planet Earth. Well, they should just look at Costco. Costco is largely unionized. You can make $40,000 a year as a clerk at Costco if you stick around for a few years. I mean, people get benefits, and Costco is successfully competing against Walmart all over the United States. And doing very well, thank you. So it's such a tragedy, and the Walton family sitting around on their butts waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, and only having to pay 15% income tax now that George W. Bush changed it so that if you work, you pay the full rate, but if you just wait for that dividend check, it's only 15%. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball,
to tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more involved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
America's attitude toward nuclear power is worlds away from that of some other countries. I'm Steve Pompa for Earthwatch Radio.
Switzerland and Japan generate nearly 40% of their electricity from nuclear reactors. And last year, China announced plans to build 30 nuclear power plants in coming years. By comparison, the United States has virtually halted nuclear construction, relying on the technology for only 20% of its electricity. Michael Corradini is a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says many countries have turned toward nuclear energy because they have fewer resources than the United States does.
The international scene very much depends on that country's ability to get energy indigenous to its borders.
Corradini says Japan is an example. It has no energy resources such as coal or oil. Corradini says nuclear power also gives heavily populated developing countries a way to improve.
The most interesting thing are the developing nations, where they're trying to move up in economic status and standard of living. China's an example, Korea an example. And in all those cases, you see that nuclear power is really considered to be one, not the only, but one of the ways to do it.
Corradini contends that more nuclear power would help the U.S. cut its reliance on coal and natural gas, but the failure to effectively deal with nuclear waste is the main factor weighing against the technology.
If we continue to simply store it and not deal with it, it is not really addressing the thing that many people worry about, which is you produce waste in the form of spent fuel. Are you starting to do something with it?
Japan, France, and other countries reprocess nuclear waste as a way to reduce it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, yes.
Has come and the land is dark.
Remember this?
The moon is the only light we'll see.
Every now and then I get a piece of bumper music that just takes me right back to I was a DJ from 68 to into the early 70s, and then I did news for 7 years on the radio, and just flashback. I want to say a number 12 on the top 20 here. Anyway, here we are, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting coast to coast. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. You know, years ago, my mother always told me that I was known by the friends I keep.
There's a grain of truth to that.
And so I am assuming that because our president was such good buddies with Kenny Lay and all of the other corporate thugs and thieves, that he learned his lessons well on how to distort financial statements.
Well, in fact, if you look back at what he did with Harkin Energy, bailing out just before it went down the tubes, insider trading, all these, you know, yeah, I'd say learned lessons. He was one of them.
If a corporate CEO or chief financial officer or a member of the board of directors of any public traded corporation came out with the bald-faced BS figures that he has come out with on Social Security, or on the budget, even in the Bush administration, they put him in jail for fraud.
There you go. Good point, Roy. Roy, I got to move along, but good point. Well said. Susan in California on the line. Hey, Susan, we've got about a minute left. What's up?
Okay, Tom, I'll make this quick. It's for the fellow who, for everybody who's out there despairing, because I know what that is. Anyway, we have a group called Women Rise for Global Peace in Santa Cruz, and there is a website that's www.womenrise.org.
Women Rise.
Rise, right. And it came out of the Code Pink stuff. And we have what we call community conversations once a month at the police station. And people just express, and it's so amazing what happens and what ideas come out and how despair changes quickly to a positive state of mind.
That's absolutely
And I just like to suggest people go to this site because they have links. And the links are to other very positive
sites with positive ideas.
Great. Susan, thanks so much. I'll pass that along. WomenRise.org. And that's one of many. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILPF.org, another great group. But there's all kinds of them. The Alliance for Democracy, MoveOn.org, on and on it goes. On and on it goes.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. A union election is set for February 25th at a Walmart tire and auto service store in Loveland, Colorado. The workers there would be the first Walmart workers in the U.S. to unionize if the United Food and Commercial Workers are successful. Norberto Ricardo is the UFCW organizer in Loveland. He believes the workers will win, but he says Walmart is trying to intimidate its workers into not joining unions. Ricardo says it's important to organize Walmart because it pays very low wages, doesn't provide adequate benefits, and drags down wages of other companies. He would like to see workers exercise their rights to organize without fear.
I would like for all these employees from Walmart to reunite together and not to be afraid and leave the fear somewhere else and go forward with the process to organize and become one union.
Federal employees from the Department of Defense marched on Capitol Hill yesterday in protest of a proposed personnel regulation overhaul. American Federation of Government Employees President John Sweeney told the hundreds of rallying employees that the National Security Personnel System will jeopardize public safety and national security by taking away employee protections that allow workers to speak freely when they see wrongdoing or mismanagement. The AFGE and other unions representing government employees are planning to file a lawsuit. The decision to implement similar changes at the Department of Homeland Security has already led to one lawsuit, saying that the changes undermine the constitutional right of due process. AFGE General Counsel Mark Roth said of the DHS changes in a press release that managers will have free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions.
New York City's Hudson Yards development has the potential to create thousands of jobs, many of them union jobs, so a coalition of labor and business groups is supporting it. There's opposition, though, from city community groups. Jim Whalen is head of the Hudson Yards Coalition, a labor-led group supporting the development.
What the Hudson Yards plan really represents is a long-term plan that is going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs for New Yorkers on all income levels.
Critics of the development and the sports stadium for the Jets that comes with it say the development is too dense and will cost the city more than $3 billion with an adverse impact on the West Side. Whalen, though, says the stadium and the union jobs it creates is good for New York.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Union membership dropped slightly in 2004. New numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics say that union membership dropped to 12.5% of all workers nationwide. The biggest drops were in Alaska, Illinois, and Missouri, with the major gains being in New York and Minnesota. Almost half of all union membership is concentrated in six states: California, New York, Michigan, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Ah, what memories we have of George W.'s lavish inaugural gala. Other presidents have been party poopers and tightwads compared to Bush. Jimmy Carter, for example, provided only peanuts, crackers, cheese, and cash bars for his celebrants. And FDR's inaugural, also held in a time of war, cost only $2,000. Guests enjoyed chicken salad. How tacky. George, on the other hand, strutted his stuff with real class, a $40 million extravaganza with lobster, champagne, nine balls, and boogie-till-you-drop private parties for the lobbyists and moneyed elites. You want class? For $10,000 each, Bush's high rollers could enjoy a delightful inaugural package at the posh Fairmont Hotel, including a beluga caviar and Dom Perignon reception, a chauffeured Rolls Royce, and, you're gonna love this, each couple was assigned two actors posing as Secret Service agents, both wearing black sunglasses and cufflink walkie-talkies. But the little people got to participate, too. For example, your average citizen of Washington, D.C. had a central role, not as celebrants, but as funders. Bush's White House forced the D.C. city government to pony up $17 million to help provide security for George and his well-heeled party bunch. This despite the fact that 91% of Washington residents voted against him in November. Forget those sticks in the mud, though, for this was a capital event, literally. The stars were not merely George and Dick Cheney, but such corporate powers as AT&T, Bank of America, Dell Computers, ExxonMobil, and Home Depot. They chipped in $250,000 each to pay for the splashy show and to buy themselves a spot at the front of the line for the governmental spoils that Bush and company will now dole out. This is Jim Hightower saying, the inaugural is over, but for these corporations, the party has just begun.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Where there is no middle class. Our quote for the day from Aristotle. Good old Aristotle. Student of Plato, student of Socrates. Where there is no middle class, and the poor greatly exceed in numbers, then troubles arise and the state soon comes to an end. For those who are concerned about the future of the United States, I'd say this is the biggest danger, is conservative economic policies that are wiping out the American middle class and creating a new feudal dynasty. Here we have, you know, CEOs retiring with $20, $30 million golden parachutes and whatnot, while the average person is literally struggling to get by. The statistics with the of all the developed nations in the world, the United States has the greatest disparity, the greatest difference between the most wealthy and the least wealthy or the most poor of any nation. And you say, well, you know, the, you know, what is he talking? Karl Marx is Now, it's just not good for democracy, is the bottom line. And traditionally, the way that we and other countries have handled that is with inheritance taxes that prevent dynasties from arising. And, of course, now the Khans have renamed this the death tax and trying to even do away with that. A Thomas Jefferson alert, our little mouse that lives outside the studio window, and occasionally, haven't seen him in a few days, occasionally comes out and roots around among all the leaves and whatnot, looking for something to eat. And there's a cat that we've seen cat prints going through here, although we've seen no evidence of the two having intersected. I got an email from Diana. She says she's a retired zoologist. She says, you've already indicated, because I've been wondering, I've asked on the air, you know, what kind of mouse might this be? I know we had a vole out here last year who looked like a mole with a tail kind of thing. But anyhow, he says, you've already indicated he has big ears, which rules out lemmings and voles. Is his belly white? Yes, it is. Or is his body the same color all over? No. Is his tail longer or shorter than his body? I think his tail is longer than his body. She says, lemmings and voles have tails shorter than their bodies. Large stand-up ears suggest paramiscus. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. White-footed mice, paramiscus leucopus, and deer mice, paramiscus maniculatus, have white undersides, including belly, legs, paws, and the undersides of their tails, and their tails are longer than their bodies. So I think either we have a white-footed mouse or a deer mouse. Domestic house mice, that's Mus muscalis, imported from the Old World, also have largest ears and long tails, but they're grayish-brown all over, no white undersides. No, that's not what we have here. A finer identification, unfortunately, typically requires killing the mouse to look at its teeth. Wow. Unless the cat gets him, that ain't going to happen. Although a local rodent expert might be able to identify it on sight. She goes on to say, mice are adorable, but they have an unfortunate habit of breeding prolifically when encouraged. I understand you have a cat. Actually, Louise and I have 5 cats, but none of them go outside. But there are a couple feral cats outside, and there's one in particular, Cat George III, who every now and then we see his tracks traveling through here. And a few days ago, we had fox prints going in the same neighborhood. That confirmed by a listener in Alaska, after having described them. So. A momentary digression from politics. We have a Bush Green Watch alert coming up. We have an interesting bit of information about this Gallup poll where everybody's saying Bush has a 57% approval rating. What you didn't know, and you will after you listen to this program. First, let's take a few phone calls. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you would like to call in. TomHartmann.com, by the way, no matter how you spell it, is the website. You can drop into our live chat room and participate with some of the finest minds. And I truly mean that. Some of the finest minds on the entire Internet. And if you have questions, you go in and ask them. People will give you links. Just bang, just like that. They can track down information. I'm blithering here. Let's go to the phones. Belinda in Illinois on the line. Hey, Belinda, what's up?
I need to know how come Congress is not standing up to Bush, and with all this budget cut, what are the poor people going to do that's just barely making it?
Well, it's a good question, Belinda, and part of the reason why Congress is not standing up to Bush is because it's not just George Bush. George Bush represents a corporate aristocracy in the United States. It is a new aristocracy. It has emerged largely. It started emerging during the administration of Dwight Eisenhower. He warned us about it as he was leaving office and said, you know, the dangers to this cannot be underestimated. And this is the group to whom George W. Bush is dancing. And they have their claws, they have their fingers deeply into Congress as well. The Republican Party is entirely sold out to these folks. And my guess is about half the Democratic Party is as well. And one of the reasons that I hope that Howard Dean can shake things up. But frankly, the problem is not George Bush. The problem is that we have a system that is broken and run amok that is being increasingly run of, by, and for the large corporations. Did you know, Belinda, that more than half, some say more than 90%, I've seen different numbers, but certainly more than half of all legislation introduced into the House of Representatives or the Senate is written in whole or in part by corporate lobbyists?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, see, this is where it begins. Go ahead.
So, actually, I mean, we've been talking, you know, Bush is, I mean, to me, he's like beginning to be like Hitler.
Well, he's a stooge.
And does he want just corporate America, you know, does he want that to take over America?
Yeah, there is a group of folks who, perhaps with the best of intentions, the Ayn Rand folks, for example, who we have on this program from time to time, the objectivists, the believers in the libertarians, who really believe that free market enterprise, which is an economic system, should be also a political system, that a government, that a country should be ruled by the market rather than by the people, and that therefore the market will solve all problems. Now, this falls into the category of religious belief because, you know, if you agree with Paul, who said that, you know, faith is belief in those things unseen, there has never, ever been evidence that this works. But this is the belief of these folks, the Club for Growth, Steve Moore, Steve Forbes, his bunch, and so many within the Republican Party, that if just the marketplace were to take over all these things, that everything would be just fine, thank you very much, and that would solve the problem. And we've had presidents warn us about this. Here, for example, just very quickly, here's a little clip from Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address in January of 1961, as he was leaving the country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
And there was another point where he talked about the seriousness of this. I think this is the clip. Let me just see.
Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society.
Yeah, that's not it. And I'm not going to track around in it. But in any case, he there's an even more eloquent part of that. But this, Eisenhower warned us about it, and Kennedy talked about it briefly, and Bobby Kennedy talked about it a lot. And we know what happened to the two of them. And nobody really has talked about it since then, this new aristocracy that has risen up. So that's in my opinion, Belinda, that is the battle of our day. That's why I wrote the book Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. And there is a movement. There's an entire movement across the United States to deny corporations human rights, which they are claiming, and say, no, sorry, you're just institutions, and you don't vote, the corporations don't vote, and as such, they have no right participating in politics. So I encourage you to check those kinds of things out. If you go to tomhartmann.com and click on corporate dominance, it's one of the things listed over on the left-hand side. There's a whole page. There's all kinds of resources, links, all sorts of stuff on that.
Okay.
So, but keep spreading the good word, Belinda, and thanks for the call.
Okay,
great to hear
thank
from
you.
I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jim in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Jim, a friend of mine is down there right now. Ken Squire from a radio station, WDEV, here in Vermont that carries our show. Broadcasting the races right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's hard for us to get around town right now.
I can imagine.
Well, I've been really glad to talk to you. I personally consider you the guru progressive radio right now. I'm going to call it that.
Okay. Well, thank you.
to make a very long story short, I'm a disabled vet now, and I'm working to help improve the political power of vets, the Democratic Party. I've been doing a lot of research into what's really going on with the veteran situation, and I wanted to be able to try to clarify, you know, the truth about what Bush has or hasn't done, and to, you know, be able to discuss what really he is planning to do with these new budget things.
Sure.
Number one, you know, technically he did not cut funds or benefits this first 4 years. However, he did not provide the money that was asked for, which is one of the reasons why the VA secretary was asked to resign. So he battled the Bush administration on that.
Right. Also, he didn't provide for the increases that were necessary, not just above and beyond inflation, but as a consequence of a war that he started.
Exactly. One of the points I was going to make was that a lot of the data they're basing their projections on was made prior to 2001. For example, Florida has the second largest veteran population in the country. Within 5 to 10 years, it's going to be the largest, second to California. But their numbers are based on 2001 projected population data.
Right.
It's not accurate. And then second of all, the restrictions, the restrictions of benefits were really geared toward the higher income people with the lower priority things. Unfortunately, those things kind of filtered down to the other category.
Yes.
And this
I have to say, if I may interrupt you just for a second, Jim, this is why I'm opposed to means testing for Social Security. Because if
absolutely.
We were to start saying, okay, everybody who makes over $200,000 a year, they don't qualify for Social Security even though they have to pay into it, or anybody who's worth $1 million, because eventually what will happen is it will start creeping down and creeping down and creeping down until it hits you and me, the same way that is happening with the veterans' benefits.
Right. Well, for example, they are using $40,000 as the income limit to charge $250 enrollment fee, and then also to increase the copay for drugs up to $15. Well, $40,000 a year doesn't really go far in a lot of places in the country.
Yeah, and before they had suggested that any veteran who earned over $25,000 was, quote, rich, end quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that we were above the poverty level.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, it's strange times we live in, Jim, when, the old saying, figures don't lie, but liars can figure, and it sure is going on. Jim,
well,
we're out of time. I appreciate your comment. I do appreciate the call. Well said. Well said. We need more truth tellers out there. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242-8272. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way.
I want my Hummer.
And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. And I'll gladly park so close to you, when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
That's the official theme song of somebody else's show. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, where the truth is non-negotiable and we run rings around the right wing every day, 5 days a week, 7 days a, well, not 7 days. What, how do you, how would you say? 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Well, been going on, we're on our third year now, starting our third year of the program actually this month. So moving right along. By the way, for Belinda, I found that piece. This is Dwight Eisenhower. Who identified himself, by the way, he referred to himself on several occasions as a liberal. The Republican president of the United States from, as I recall, what was it, it was 48 or 50 was when that election was held. I think, you know, or 52. Frankly, I wasn't alive then where I was born in 51, so I wasn't noticing. Anyhow, he was president for a while in there, and I think one of our better presidents, frankly. And here are his, I just want to share this little piece of his comment.
Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government.
And that, you know, even spiritual, he says, which is just remarkable that Dwight Eisenhower would speak like that. And it's not, frankly, it's not remarkable that Dwight Eisenhower would speak, but that an American politician would speak like that. And he's right. And Belinda, in answer to your question, that's what's going on. It's not just George W. Bush. It's something much larger, much more insidious, and frankly, much, much more dangerous to democracy than that. 1-866-889-8894, and let's see here, Mike in Manhattan, New York on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Mike?
I wanted to know where you were getting the information about the exit polls, because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and he asked me, and I was kind of dumbfounded. I didn't know where to go.
Which information do you mean?
You know, about how the exit polls didn't match in the places where the electronic voting machines weren't used.
Oh, there's usvotecounts.org.
Okay.
Or US Count Votes, uscountvotes.org. Tell you what, I'll post a link to it. They just issued a press release this last weekend I'll post a link to it on the message board. But a whole bunch of really, really very competent, some of the nation's most competent, Josh Middledorf from Temple University, for example, the most competent statisticians and scientists did an analysis of the Edison-Matovsky numbers, Edison and Matovsky being the two companies that did the exit polling. Uh-huh. And Edison-Matovsky said, well, you know, it's just that we hired young people and the Republicans didn't want to speak out. And it turns out the Republicans actually were more willing to speak out than Democrats in some districts. And they took these numbers apart and said, and one of the, just kind of anecdotally, in fact, it's mentioned in like the sixth paragraph of the news release. I thought it should have been the headline, that they didn't find anomalies in areas where there were paper ballots that were hand counted. But they did find the major anomalies in those areas where there were electronic machines that left no trail.
And what are the chances, you think, of us dealing with this issue before the 2002 election?
You mean the 2006 election?
If that's what I meant.
Yeah. I am very, very hopeful. Because I am, as I said before, this makes me a conspiracy nut, but I'm of the opinion that we've had three elections that have been hacked. Not necessarily by an entire party, not necessarily by some huge conspiracy, maybe just by local zealots. But I'm convinced that we've had three elections that would have been hacked, and I don't want to see another one. So,
all right. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Pass the word along, Mike.
I will.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
President George W. Bush has completely eliminated funding for Amtrak in his new budget proposal.
The Bush administration has long been out to dismantle Amtrak, but this is really a new low where they've actually come right out and zeroed out its budget.
Michael Buckley is communications director for the AFL-CIO Transportation Trades Department. He says the TTD believes privatizing the railway is a bad decision.
It's a very reckless and irresponsible policy choice. It would put 22,000 workers out of jobs. It would strand millions of passengers throughout the country. It would send many more cars to already congested highways.
The department's president, Edward Witkin, spoke before Congress on Tuesday. He says it seems that Bush believes that if Amtrak is forced into bankruptcy, a new private sector will emerge from its ashes. Buckley says that the reaction from Congress has been encouraging.
And they don't see Amtrak as sort of the inside the beltway political football. They see it as a nuts and bolts part of their community.
Unite Here Local 11 heads back into more talks with eight luxury hotels in the Los Angeles area today as hotel workers struggle to win fair and just contracts. Local 11 president Maria Elena Durazo says that big issues include the cost of health insurance and workloads, and she says the hotels are aggressively anti-worker.
They're taking a very, very aggressive anti-worker campaign in all of the workplaces, and so it is a constant daily battle inside those hotels.
Unite Here is encouraging a boycott of Hyatt, Hilton, and Starwood hotels.
Don't go to these boycotted hotels and support the workers.
For information on the boycott on the web, go to hoteladvisor.org.
The workers are not holding back. They're engaged in this, and they're making a lot of sacrifices to be able to win what is fair.
Bargainers from Unite Here are meeting with representatives from the eight luxury hotels in Los Angeles today.
In the midst of a bitter labor dispute, the U.S. soccer team beat Trinidad and Tobago in its first World Cup qualifying round. A three-week player lockout by the U.S. Soccer Federation ended on January 21st. The players have been without a contract for more than 2 years. The players came to a temporary no-strike agreement with the federation at the end of January. The agreement also gives the players a 38% increase in per-game bonuses.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Unit labor costs are total compensation divided by real economic output. It's the best measure of a worker's share of production. The lower unit labor costs go, the less workers get. As of 2003, unit labor costs were in their most sustained decline in 50 years. Fewer workers turning out more work and falling real wages have combined to drive unit labor costs down. For workers, that means business is producing more with fewer workers working for less money. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
When someone makes a move of which we don't approve, who is it that always intervenes? UN and OAS, they have their place, I guess. But first, send the Marines.
Ah, Tom Lehrer.
Send them all we've got. John Wayne and Randolph Scott. Remember those exciting fighting scenes.
Welcome back, my friends. 27 and 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. And Dave in Northern California on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mark, Tom, I certainly share all of your concerns, as you well know, about these voting machines. Mike touched on it before me. As I see it, that's going to be the big bridge. So many people, they call and they ask you, why doesn't Congress act? Why is there not an impeachment? And it is because they now have the numbers to do whatever the hell they want, pretty much. So,
yeah, Joe Stalin said it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes.
Yes. So the big bridge is going to be making elections credible, non-fraudulent.
Yeah.
And how we're going to get hazard and delay to permit such a thing is going to be the big trick. You know, we've been trying for a long time.
It's going to take an outcry from the American people. It's going to take a lot of people standing up and speaking out very loudly and saying, you know, we want elections that are clean, that are honest. We do not want people. You know, there's several issues here, Dave. Number one, we don't want electronic voting machines that can be hacked, that are connected to computers. We don't want tabulating machines where all the voting machines feed into to be hackable and connected to modems and the internet. We don't want machines that don't have a paper trail, like the entire state of Georgia, for example. I am still to this day convinced Max Cleland won that election. On top of everything else, and this is vitally important, we do not want secretaries of state to be allowed to participate in politics during election years.
You know, when Kevin Shelley, the Secretary of State of this state, did that, he made some big enemies, and they've been investigating him on every front.
Oh, I was out there last. Well, you heard me broadcasting my show from Palm Springs, and did he just get kicked out, or are they?
He just quit. He just gave up. You know,
yeah.
I think they were just. I'm sure they had some goods on him, but it was typical of what they all are doing. You know, they just, yeah. In his case, since he'd gone against their wishes. You know, in this state, one county said they couldn't afford to switch their machines at a late date. They just couldn't afford it. It was San Bernardino County. California went overwhelmingly for Kerry and Edwards. San Bernardino County went overwhelmingly for Bush and Gore.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't been able
to get access to any of the exit polling. I'd be real curious to see what it's like in San Bernardino County.
Yeah, well, neither is anybody else, because they're keeping that under pretty tight wraps.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, one of the folks in our chat room had put the URL out, and let me just scroll up and get it here. It is uscountvotes.org, and then there's a whole long thing after that, but what you're looking for is the analysis of the Matovsky-Edison report, and I'm sure you can find it right off that homepage, uscountvotes.org.
Thank you so much, Tom. You know, I think one thing you could do, and that is every day just humiliate our government for not getting rid of these riggable machines. I think.
Well, I speak about it frequently. I'm not sure humiliation is what it's going to take. I think what it's going to take is folks like you and me, Dave, speaking to our elected representatives and saying, please put this at the top of your agenda. I know you get contributions from these voting machine companies. I know that they're wired into some very powerful people, but nonetheless, please buck them and give us elections that we can believe in.
And I think, you know, if we really do this, we might get 7 or 8 congressmen to go our way. There's a few good ones in there.
Well, there's already quite a few. I mean, over 100 members of Congress have signed on to Rush Holt's bill. And,
yes,
you know, it's just that Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert will not allow it out for a vote. They won't let it out for a vote. Hillary Clinton co-authored a bill in the Senate. Same thing. Bill Frist won't let it out for a vote. We need to be speaking up and saying, no, We will not put up with that. We want to know that our elections are clean. And we don't have the, we do not know that right now in America. They may be, but you can't prove it. And that, in my mind, is not a clean election.
You don't find the evidence that they are being hacked to be literally overwhelming. Why else would they have the damage?
I believe that there is substantial evidence that they have been hacked, and it's right laying out there in the open for anybody to see who wants to take the time to look at it. But that's, you know, again, I don't want to spend, you know, a half hour on it, Dave. I've said my piece. You have too, and we are in agreement on that, and so we will stop at that point because. Generally, agreement makes for boring talk radio. Maybe somebody wants to call up and tell me I'm crazy. That would be interesting. Anyhow, let's have a Bush Greenwatch alert. Yes, the Bush administration, they're at it again. This is from bushgreenwatch.org. The Bushies looking at our environment. And thinking, oh boy, yes. During the past decade, a new form of pollution has grown into a serious problem, one the framers of the Clean Air Act could never have anticipated. And keep in mind, the Clean Air Act only goes back about 30 years. It's caused by the consolidation over the past decade of countless small farms into huge factory farms that raise thousands, and I would say in some cases tens of thousands, of hogs, heifers, and chickens in impossibly cramped quarters, euphemistically called concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. The giant facilities also raise an enormous stench as giant piles of rotting waste produce clouds of ammonia, hydrogen sulfide, volatile organic compounds, and particulates. Their emissions have become so obnoxious that news reports regularly pop up when area residents demand that these corporate farms clean up their mess. There was little coverage, however. This is the kicker. Little coverage when on the day after George W. Bush had his coronation, and all the news reports were talking about, what kind of a party can $40 million buy? One of the first acts of the new Bush administration was to hand these polluters a generous free pass. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, offered CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, more than 2 years of immunity from the Clean Air Act. You got to reduce your emissions by 5% or so. No, immunity. It's like, gee, I'd like to have immunity from the Bank Robbery Act. Actually, I wouldn't. Frankly, it's more fun making a living doing talk radio, but nonetheless, I'm sure there are some folks out there who would like it. The EPA offered CAFOs more than 2 years immunity from the Clean Air Act, as well as from certain toxic discharge standards. Yes, my friends, if you are one of the corporations that regularly pollutes the air with these huge factory farms, by the way, there are states fighting back. In Nebraska, they're fighting back. In Pennsylvania, there's over 100 communities that have passed laws to fight back against this, denying corporate personhood, saying corporations aren't persons. And we are. And so if a corporation wants to come in and soil our air and water, they do not have the Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. They don't have the Fifth Amendment right to keep secret what they know about. No, we are the people. And as the Bush Greenwatch folks, bushgreenwatch.org, point out, indeed, one of the biggest factory farmers, Tyson Foods, had anteed up $100,000 just the week before to enjoy an inaugural candlelight dinner with President Bush and Vice President Cheney. Isn't that sweet? That's what's wrong with America. It ain't just Bush, I'm telling you. It is a system. It is a broken, broken, broken system. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Helen in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Helen, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Tom. I would like to say, I don't know what we'd do without hearing you.
Well, bless you. Thank you.
You're very informative. And I'm just sorry we only get you 1 hour in our state.
Well, you never know what the future will bring.
Beg your pardon?
You never know what the future will bring. We've had a couple of stations where we started out with 1 or 2 hours that are up to all three, so you just never know.
Well, I feel we're being deprived, and freedom is suffering.
Yeah. On the other hand, I want to say, you know, I totally support the folks who run radio stations and whatever programming decisions that they make in their local communities.
Oh, I'm grateful for the 1 hour.
Yeah, me too.
I really am.
Me too. So let's move on to another topic, Helen. What's
up? Okay, I would like to say, you probably don't want to hear about the election machines again, but what I can't figure out, and maybe you can explain it to me, why can't the Democrats buy their voting machines since the Republicans own the other ones?
Well, the four corporations that make the majority of the voting machines in America are all Republican affiliated. The two largest ones, ESNS and Diebold, two brothers. One is the president of one of them. The other is the vice president of the other. They are major contributors to the Republican Party. ESNS, of course, has a long history with Chuck Hagel out of Nebraska. Chuck was the head of the company that became ESNS. He sold those voting machines to the state of Nebraska, and then he resigned and ran for the Senate. And lo and behold, in what the Washington Post referred to as the upset victory of the year, Chuck Hagel won the state, even in areas that had never before voted Republican, in black areas, in poor areas. And it was a miracle. It was just a miracle.
Well, I believe at this point, we Democrats would stand in line and paper ballot and be happy to do so and have our Democrat people count our votes and let them count theirs. I'm sorry, but this is the way it's coming down to, and I'm feeling this way.
Well, here's part of the problem of what happened, Helen. There were a lot of folks, a lot of Democrats, who were not trusting these machines, which are owned by the Republican corporations, and were, you know, you got Wally O'Dell, the president of Diebold, saying that he's going to help bring home Ohio for George W. Bush, you know, and in a fundraising letter. Now, I didn't interpret that as him saying he was going to rig the machines. I just thought it was unseemly that the head of a voting machine company would be so politically active. But in any case, a lot of folks looked at this and they said, okay, I'm not going to go in and use these machines. I'm going to vote by absentee ballot. And what happened was the absentee ballots had the highest percentage of not being counted from state to state, particularly in the battleground states, particularly in Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Florida.
And ours, probably.
It wouldn't surprise me. And the reason why, of course, being that if you're voting by absentee ballot, there's a few extra hurdles that you have to jump through. You've got to sign just in the right place. You got to fill in just the right box, all this kind of stuff. And the absentee ballots had the highest rate of spoilage, and they were, in my guess, I mean, nobody knows because there's been no good, careful analysis of this, but I'm guessing that they were mostly Democratic ballots. And so a lot of Democrats shot themselves in the foot by voting by absentee ballots, saying, okay, I'm just going to do it by paper, and because the recounts didn't happen.
It's possible then everyone's learned a great lesson.
Well, hopefully, and hopefully the lesson is that that you know we want some change. I mean, we have been putting up with in this country is outrageous that we would tolerate private corporations.
I feel un-American. I'm totally overwhelmed. I'm sure as many of us are. We love our country, but we shouldn't have to be treated the way we're being treated with many issues that's come about today. And I'm so appalled that the suggestion of the Social Security be brought up when this president won't even be around in 2042.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting, and it's a political tactic, and it's terrible for us Democrats to have to tolerate this.
Yeah, and for us to independents as well. Helen, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Here's what has to be said, I think. We need to, as Howard Beale did.
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Yeah, and that's what we need to be saying about our voting machines. Now, here's what you didn't know about the voting, not the voting machines, but the polling that was done. Yesterday's Gallup poll, which was widely reported in all the news media, showed Bush's approval rating of 57%. 57% of Americans approve of George Bush. Isn't this wonderful news? And, of course, it's being trumpeted not only in the right-wing radio, but it's also being trumpeted on TV and news. According to the Gallup poll, 57% of Americans approve of George W. Bush. Well, let me just give you a baseline, first of all. The Pew Center did an analysis, and they had 33% Democrats and 33% Republicans they interviewed. That makes a certain amount of sense. ABC News Washington poll, Washington Post poll, they found that there's actually more people who are registered as Democrats than as Republicans in the United States. They had a few slightly more Democrats than Republicans. But the Gallup poll, when they asked Americans, do you approve or disapprove of the way George Bush is handling his presidency? Of the people that they interrogated, only 28% were Democrats. 37% were Republicans. You get that? 28% Democrats, 37% Republicans, 35% Independents, and this is the group that they said, do you think George is doing a good job? 8% more Republicans than Democrats, and suddenly he's above the 50% point. He's 1 point above 50%. Isn't that wonderful? But we had 8% more Republicans that we asked the question of. What is going on with the Gallup organization? I sure would like to know. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, where the truth is non-negotiable.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Tuesday marked the fifth anniversary of low-power FM radio's existence, and the Federal Communications Commission heard from advocates of micro-radio, making good on a promise to consider the low-power community broadcaster's contribution to the media landscape. DC radio co-op Selena Masuta was at the FCC.
Low-power FM truly represents a unique opportunity to give new voice to old communities. And so it really holds a special place in our heart here at the Federal Communications Commission.
That was outgoing FCC Chairperson Michael Powell addressing hundreds of low-power FM advocates. Low-power FM is community-based, non-commercial radio stations that cover about a 3 to 7 mile radius. LPFM broadcasters say that their operations are being hindered by FCC and congressional rulings. Some LPFM broadcasters have waited as long as 5 years to receive confirmation for their licenses and travel to D.C. to urge the action. Some of what people like Anthony Mazza with Prometheus Radio and LPFM Advocacy Group are asking the FCC includes opening the door for more LPFM stations to be formed, especially after proving that the creation of these stations would not affect the signal of commercial stations.
The FCC is waiting for word from Congress that they can move forward on their original vision. It's the opinion of a lot of low-power stations and Prometheus Radio that the FCC can do things on their own without waiting for an okay from Congress.
Lucas Benitez of Immokalee, Florida, spoke at the FCC hearing. Benito says radio station has become the gathering point for Immokalee's mostly immigrant farm working community.
In Immokalee, we have the indigenous people from Mexico, from Guatemala, and the first language is Cancobal, Mam, Quiche, Toxil from Mexico. So we have people in the radio programs that give this programs in their own language.
For Workers Independent News, I am Selena Masuda, reporting from Washington, D.C.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
Is democracy coming to the United States of America? One can hope. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And, of course, this program being streamed all over the planet on a half a dozen different web stations, including radiopower.org and whatnot. Joe in Paris, France on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Good to talk with you. Great program. I enjoy it just about as often as I can listen to it.
Well, thank you. How is everything in Paris?
It's humid and rainy, but not as cold as it is back there.
Yeah. We're in the middle of a snowstorm here in Vermont. What's up, Joe?
Well, interesting that you should be talking about the election, the stolen election, the election that was at least partially fraudulent, I think. I was back in the States during the election, and right away it seemed as though the statistics were the there was something that had gone awry, and to what extent it was systematic, to what extent it was widespread will be hard to be proved. But the thing that's most disturbing now, here a couple of months after the election, is that it seems as though there are lots of Democrats, lots of Kerry voters, lots of Democratic voters who refuse to believe that even now of any possibility of the fact that this could happen in the United States.
Yeah.
I checked onto the report, the U.S. count votes report. It doesn't make any broad claims, but it points up some questions that have got to be answered, and set it to some statistics, actually, some statisticians that I know, who took it apart right away, and claimed that the statisticians weren't as credible as the work they do, and that in fact the problem is not whether votes are counted or not. The election, of course, this is America; it had to be fair. The problem is basically that the Democrats can't put up good candidates, and they can't get out their message, and a whole litany of excuses as to how we lost this election. I want to know what your take was on that.
Well, my take on it is that there is some truth to that, in that the Democratic candidates, no candidate is ever the perfect candidate. There are weak Republican candidates as well. And as I said much earlier in the program, I think that I thought it was interesting that during the Democratic primaries, the only candidate that the Republicans spent $1 million to defeat in the Iowa primary was Howard Dean. And I reminded me of when Nixon did the polling and found out that he could easily beat George McGovern, but he could not beat Ed Muskie. Ed Muskie would trounce him. And so they sent his operatives up to New Hampshire and put some acid in Ed Muskie's coffee, and Ed Muskie's up on the back and planted those phony letters. They stole the letterhead, Muskie's letterhead, and Muskie's up on the back of that trailer flatbed truck crying and blubbering his eyes out about his wife, and that was the end of his candidacy. And they took him down because they didn't want to run against him. And I think that the Republicans did the same thing with Dean. They took him down because they didn't want to run against him because they thought he'd beat Bush. But setting that aside, I don't think that it's a matter of good candidates or bad candidates. I think that we have some serious problems with our elections. Even if all the voting machines are accurate, you've got folks like Ken Blackwell in Ohio setting it up so that in heavily Democratic districts, people have to wait in line 10, 12 hours to vote. down in Florida, 60, 70,000 people being bumped off the rolls in largely African-American communities. I mean, these have been rigged elections ever since Bush started.
In spite of all of that, people and Democrats surprisingly refuse to believe that elections can be stolen.
Some Democrats
that there's a major problem in the system that can be corrected.
Yes, yeah, some
it's,
Democrats.
It's astonishing. I can't figure it out.
I absolutely agree with you, Joe. And I think that this is going to be one of the big issues of the next few years. And hopefully Congress will get their act together and figure it out. Joe, thanks for the call from Paris.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Oh my. We live in interesting times, as the Chinese curse goes. Please, get politically active. Wake up. Wake up others.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop.